All right, so we're beginning here on the top of Mem Gimel Amud Aleph on the first line. Just to review what we closed with yesterday, which is that the Mishnah lists 18 trefod, but we said that our Mishnah has an inclusionary line at the end, which is Zeaklal. There's a principle that allows us to include all these other trefod. The problem was Tana Debate Rabbi Shmuel, who enumerated 18 and then said, that's it. It sounds like from then there's 18 and they don't give any extra language that indicates that there's another way to include other items besides the 18. And so then we were left in a bind because the Gemara brought down a series of trefot that are found in Mishnayot and Braitot, which was called Bazger. And then they had another series of trefot that were mentioned by the Amoraim, which were called the Shav Shmaitata. So there we have an additional 11 items that we want to include. Yeah, Tana Debei Rabbi Shmuel is locked in at 18, and we already have 18 that are enumerated in our Mishnah. In order to solve that problem, the Gemara then combined a number of items. At first, they had combined Beta Kosot and Hemses, which looked to be connected in the Mishnah anyway. But then later on, they went to say that all the Nikvot, all the things that have punctures in them, holes in them, are all one type of Trefa, just different manifestations of the same Trefa. It's a Nikev. And then there are a list of organs that are affected by a nekev, but they're all one item. Our Mishnah enumerates 10 nekevim, and now we're combining them all down to one, and that frees up 9 slots. So that helps you out in terms of getting slots. And then you have an additional 2 slots that are freed up by the psika. We said there were 2 psikot in the Mishnah, the psikat agargeret and the psikat chuta shidra. Combine those, that gives you a 10th slot that is free. The Gemara yesterday said that there were only 8 nikvot, even though there are really 10 in the Mishnah. That's because the Gemara has already worked through the fact that they were combining Hemses and Kosot made it into one. And at this point, they thought Mara, that the gallbladder was out of the picture. We're going to bring all of those back in, so there really are 10 nikvot. You combine them down to one, that leaves you 9 open spaces. Then you have the 2 psikot that are put together, that gives you another open space. That's 10 extra spaces. We had Basker, which is 4, and the Shav Shmaitata, which is 7. That's 11 items. But one of those items was Rav Avira, who speaks about a puncture, a hole in the spleen. And that's another Nekev. So that would be subsumed under Nekev, and that leaves you only with 10 that you need to include. And we freed up 10 spaces, and that's how we get to the 18 items. Rashi, in addition to that, mentions that there are a number of trefot that are mentioned by the Amoraim upcoming. And what do we do with those? And he says, V'chol chdanech trefot demanina the kaman. All of those trefot that we mentioned later, bireya, that have to do with the lungs, pigon, khalif, the oni, that the lobes were exchanged, vidamia the bisra, or it looks differently, or the beata of atum bireya, kulhu bichlau reya shenikva o chasra ninhu. They're all subsumed under the category of a punctured lung, or a lung that is missing. Meaning that each of these items, if there's really something wrong with it, it's the equivalent of not having the lobe there, it's the equivalent of not having the lung there. And if it has some sort of deficiency in it, Rashi says, v'cholakuta sofali nakev. Anything that is rotten or has something wrong with it where there is a deterioration in the organ, by definition, deterioration leads to a puncture. And so therefore that will be subsumed under nekev. So Rashi therefore includes all these items that we're going to mention later under either nekev or chaserah by the lungs. And in that way we capture everything in the 18 that are enumerated there. Now Amar Ula, which is the beginning of today's daf, chet minei trefot nemrulo the Moshe Mitzinai. There are actually 8 different trefot that were mentioned with the Moshe Mitzinai. And he now has headers or categories, which allow us then to combine many of the different trefot that we spoke about. Nikuva, which again, we had 11 nikuvot. They're going to all be combined together into a single nekev, plus a little more based on what Rashi just told us here. Psuka, we already had mentioned that before, but you have the psukot, which are the psuka ta gargeret, and we had the psuke chuda sidra. Then we had nitula, which is that it was removed or it didn't exist. And then you have with nitala kaveit, and luda is considered to be nitula. Also be bukadatma, the shap mituchte, the hip that was dislocated out of its place. That's also like a nitula. And also the simanim, shenidal dulu, that's also considered to be a nitula. Then you had vichasura, chaser. So something that's chaser, again, would be the lungs that we mentioned before. Rea shechasura is also from the basger. Beimash nechtechu raglam in arkova. and chisaron bashidra, which are also chasura, and charuta, which is the lungs drying up, are considered to be nakuva or chasera. And then the other items that Rashi mentioned over here that are other psulot of the lung are also subsumed that are chasera. Rashi explains that netula means that they took out an entire aver, and then chasura is that it's missing a part of the aver. On the other hand, the Rambam says that it has to do with whether it's congenital or not. Chasera was something that was congenital, missing from the beginning. Nitula was something that was taken after it was born, and that's the difference between chasera and nitula. Krua, which is your fifth category, includes the nikra rova keres achitzon, as well as basar b'chofet rova keres berubo trefa, which according to Shmuel are two different things. There's an opinion later on that they're the same thing, that quote in our Mishnah, as well as that which Shmuel mentions over here. According to Shmuel, they're clearly two different things, and therefore they are kruot, that are the additional item. Then we have nifula, which was one of the items that was mentioned in the Mishnah when it falls down. That's a particular type of problem. And then we have drusa, which is, again, something where there's an attack or an animal that attacks. Again, with a specific category that's mentioned in the Mishnah. And then we have shvura, which is something that's broken. And we have a number of those. We have the, from the Shav Shmaitata, we have the Gugolich and Nechbisa, Kunekra at Sela Mikara. Those are Shburot. And then in addition to that, we had the Nishtabru Rob Tseloteha. That's also subsumed under Shvura. And so that way, you cover all the items that we mentioned in the Mishnah, in the Basgir, and in the Shav Shmaitata. And the Mishnah, you cover them by all these main eight categories. So now, the Gemara wants to know, what did Ula do when he categorized them to eight categories? But they cover everything that we were looking for in Trefot. Is there something that he did not include over here? And the answer to the Gemara is, Lafuke Lukuta Derochish Bar Papa. Lukuta is not captured in the statement of Ula, which is, Rav Papa said before, if the kidney has something wrong with it, that it is somehow diseased, or there's a problem with the kidney, again, the Gemara will discuss what exactly the issues are, but that is not included because he didn't mention Lukuta as one of his eight categories. Rashi over here says that Likuta de Rochish is out completely. He doesn't think that it is a problem, or he doesn't think it's a trefa whatsoever. Whereas the Rambam says that he just doesn't think it's one of the lochot, the Moshe Misinai. Doesn't mean that it's not a trefa. That could mean either because of the Zechlal in the Mishnah, and it's captured by the Zechlal in the Mishnah, or simply that it's a category, but a category that's just not a lochot, the Moshe Misinai. So that's what it means. Lafuke, according to the Rambam, he doesn't fundamentally disagree with the trefa. On the other hand, according to Rashi, it's a fundamental difference, and he thinks Lakuta is not a trefa at all. Amar Chia Barav, Chet Trefot Yesh Binikuva. There are eight trefot in a nikuva. That's interesting because we, again, had before enumerated 10 of them in our Mishnah, plus an additional one that we mentioned from the Shav Shmaitata, which is Nikei Batcho, the spleen that was punctured, so you have 11, and he's saying that we only have 8. Im tomar tet, if you tell me there really are 9, mara Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda Ktanila. The gallbladder being punctured is a dat yachid, as we saw yesterday of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore I don't count that amongst the ones that we have. Now, we had 11 in total. We now dropped it down to 10 because of the mara that we're dropping out of the picture. Then you have to combine the Hemseis and the Beit HaKosot. So that gets you down to 9, but you still have 9, and he's mentioning the fact that there are only 8. So then Rashi over here notes, Derav Avira, Leit Le Dechia. And he also says that he doesn't have the one in the Shav Shmaitata, which is that he doesn't have the one of the puncture of the spleen. That is not included in his list. So that means he really eliminates two things from his list. The Mara, which is mentioned in the Mishnah, which says it's the Dat Yachid of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, and the Tchol, which was mentioned by Rav Avira, which is one of the Shav Shmaitata. That's how we get down to 8 now over here. He has the 10 of the Mishnah plus the 1 of the Shav Shmaitata. He doesn't count the 1 of the Shav Shmaitata, so now we're back to 10. He doesn't count the Mara, because that's the Dat Yachid, that's down to 9. And then he combines the Hemseis and the Beit HaKosot. That gets you to 8. And that's why he has a list of 8 nikuvot that are problematic. And then he brings the name of Yossi Rav Yehuda, Detanya, nikva keba, nikvu adakim, trefa. If the stomach or the intestines were punctured, it is a trefa. Now, here it could be that they're referencing to keba, in the more general sense of the digestive system, or it could be that they are referring to the abomasum, which is the last of the stomachs that the cow uses in its digestive process. Either one of those would be true, that if they were nikvu, that they would be a trefa. Even if the gallbladder was punctured, it's also a problem. Whereas Chiya Barav does not subscribe to that because he thinks it's a dat yachid. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak bar Rabbi Yosef, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Halacha Rabbi Yosef bar Rabbi Yehuda. The halacha is like Rabbi Yosef bar Rabbi Yehuda, so he's clearly arguing on the position taken here by Chiya Barav that says that the halacha is not like Rabbi Yosef bar Rabbi Yehuda. Here we have Rabbi Yitzchak bar Rabbi Yosef bringing a member of Rabbi Yochanan from Eretz Yisrael. He learned in Eretz Yisrael and then returned to Bavel, and he many times quotes Rabbi Yochanan from the Memorot of Eretz Yisrael. And over here, we're going to find a number of memorot from him that we're going to see now that are quoting Rabbi Yochanan, one of which is, the halacha is, ki Rabbi Yosef bi Rabbi Yehuda. V'amar Rabbi Yitzchak bi Rabbi Yosef, amar Rabbi Yochanan, mai ahadulei chavrei Rabbi Yosef bi Rabbi Yehuda. What was the response of those that argued on Rabbi Yosef bi Rabbi Yehuda? He seems to have a good point that if a gallbladder was punctured, that should be enough to render it a trefa. And the answer is the pasuk that says Ishpoch la'aretz mireirati. So they're playing on the word mireirati as being the mara, the gallbladder, that has thrown down to the ground his mara. And by definition, there's some sort of damage or injury that takes place to the gallbladder, which means now that it was punctured, but da'in Iyov kayam, and Iyov lived. And that's part of what happens to Iyov. He's punished with all of these different ailments and problems, but in the end, he lives through it. So Amar Lahem, so he responds to them, Ein maskirim maseh nisim. That's a miracle that he lived. That's the whole point of what's happening to Iyov. We'll see in 1 second, but the instructions in the beginning of Iyov are to the Satan, that you can do whatever you want. The only thing you can't do is kill Iyov. So by definition, he has to keep Iyov alive, and it doesn't matter what's happened to him. Dilo te mahochi, because if you don't say that, what are you going to do with the pasuk that says, Yifalach kil yotai velo yachmol? The way that Rashi explains Yifalach means Haino lukuta vitrefa. That is the equivalent of the lukuta of Rachish bar Papa that we saw before. That's a kidney that is diseased in some way, has a problem with it. And despite that, velo yachmol, and he had no mercy on him. But again, he lived. He survived that. Tosafot is a little more circumspect about that. And he says he doesn't think that the lukuta over here is the same as the lukuta of Rachish bar Papa, because he says that later on we have certain cures to it that the Gemara speaks about. There's certain types of lukuta that are okay, some that are not okay. So how do you know which one it was, and how do you know whether it renders it a trefa? So he says, Elahachi parech, Yifalach kil yotai mika chayi belo rufua. He says, yes, there are times where you can survive it if you have medical intervention. But without medical intervention, nobody survives that. And that's the question over here. Iyov doesn't get any medical intervention, and yet he does survive this. The other translation of Yifalach, Rashi seems to say that it means likuta, or means to be peeled away. Others suggest that it means, like Tosafot says here, bikua. That means some sort of breaking, some sort of bursting. And it was like my kidneys were torn asunder, ripped apart, and Hashem had no mercy. Mikachaye, how could he live if that was the case? Ella, Nisa, Shiny. It's a miracle, and that's what's different. Dichtiv, because the pasuk says, the pasuk actually doesn't say rak, it says ach. Ach et nafsho shemor, that Hashem says to the Satan, you can do whatever you want to Iyov, but you have to keep him alive. So hachanami, Nisa, Shiny. So too by the mara, the pasuk that you brought is not sufficient, because that's a miraculous event. And miraculous events are not evidence of the fact that this is a truism in general. A number of things to point out over here. First of all, the fact that they're bringing proofs from Iyov shows you that there's some interplay between human trefot and animal trefot. And that's the point that Tosafot made yesterday, which is that you can't just say, oh, humans are different. Because the Gemara brings many times, like over here in Iyov, proof from a human being that that should be true by an animal. And the Gemara just doesn't say, oh, it's a human being, forget about it. That's not how the Gemara deals with it. The Gemara thinks that that's a fine thing. And so Tosafot's of the impression that in general, anything that's true by an animal or a human being, there's going to be cross-pollinization between them. And if it's a trefa by one, it'll be the trefa by the other. Unless there's some sort of indication or reason that it should be different because there's a physiological difference between the human being and the behemah, which Tosafot made a suggestion yesterday that the lower film that covers the brain is much harder or stronger in the human being than it is by the animal. And so that would cause a difference, but otherwise we would assume that they have the same thing, and that's borne out by the story of Iyov over here. Also, as Rashi quotes over here, the story by the Satan that he had to keep Iyov alive, it says in the Gemara in Baba Batra, Gadol Tzaro Shel Satan Mishel Iyov, that the Satan had a harder time than Iyov, because the Satan's whole purpose is to take life, and it's to remove life. And over here, where he could only torture Iyov, but he could never bring him over that threshold to kill him, it says that the Satan was in more pain or had more difficulty with the situation than Iyov himself. Mashal Omer Labdo, the equivalent of telling his slave, Shvor Chavit, break the barrel, Ushmor Yena, and keep the wine. So here he has to break Iyov, but without letting his life leave him and sparing his life through that process. And that's why it's considered miraculous over here. So again, that's the second memra that we have from Rabbi Yitzchak, Bar Yosef, Am Rabbi Yochanan. The first of which is the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda. The second of which is what was the conversation that took place in this machloka between Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbonon. And now we have a third one, which is Am Rabbi Yitzchak, Rabbi Yosef, Am Rabbi Yochanan, halacha kedivrei omer kizayit. The halacha is like the one who says that it is a kizayit. Now this is a very difficult statement because of the fact that we have two Mishnayot. We have our Mishnah of Elu Trefot. In our Mishnah of Elu Trefot, one of the Trefot over there was a Kaved that was taken out completely. It was Nitala Kaved, Velo Nishtayer Klum. There was nothing left of it. The next Mishnah is Ve'elu Ksherot, what are considered to be okay. Over there it says that a Kaved that has a Kazayit worth of Kaved left in it, that is Kasher. But that leaves you with a gap in the Halacha. That means that for a kazayit and above, kasher. Or it says that if the kaved is missing completely, that it is a treifa. What's missing is between a kazayit and klum, what is the din? So over here, we have a psak aloha from Yitzhak Rabbi Yosef in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, the aloha kedivrei omer kazayit. The aloha is like that Mishnah over there. Now, why did he pick, first of all, that Mishnah over there versus our Mishnah over here? And the additional problem is, umi amar Rabbi Yochanan ochi. Why is Rabbi Yochanan passing a aloha like this? The halacha is like a stam mishnah, but it's not. And we have a mishnah for la'al kaved, velo nishtar memenu klom, ha nishtar k'sheira. That's our mishnah, that it says that if you have the kaved taken out and nothing's left of it, implying that if something was left, it is k'sheira. Afagav delo avi kizayit, even though it's not a kizayit. So now, our mishnah is a stam mishnah, and so is the mishnah later on a stam mishnah. So now you have two stam mishnayot. And so why is he paskening one stam mishnah over another stam mishnah? In the simple sense, that's the nature of the question, which is you have a stam mishnah, stam mishnah, and now he picked the other stam mishnah. Rashi says over here, "Hey chadika trei stamei the satran adodi." When you have two stam mishnah that argue on each other, can't be reconciled. "Iika taima lolume chada mechaverta." If you have a reason to favor one over the other, meaning that there's other evidence that favors one of the two stam mishnayot, then that's what you would do. Azal Rabbi Yochanan Batra, he favors that. If not, we leave it as a safek, and we would not be koveah halacha like either of one of them. And he says, had we found a reason to favor one over the other, okay, that would have been something. But we don't have that. We have no reason to favor one over the other. And since we don't have any reason to favor one over the other, why is he favoring the second one over the first one? That's Rashi's view of it. Baitosva challenged that by saying, the problem with asking the question that way is because we have a belief that within a mesechta, especially within a single perek, there is a seder to the mishnayot. That means that whenever you have two mishnayot, we give a higher priority to the second mishnah because that already incorporates what's in the first mishnah, and then you would favor the statement in the second mishnah. That means if you were to say halacha stam mishnah, even though both of them are stam mishnayot, by design you would favor the second mishnah. So then why is Rabbi Yisrael and Rabbi Yosef coming and paskening halacha like that second Mishnah, if that's what you would have done anyway? The Ramban says that the Mishnah further on, the Gir says, Nishtar mimenu klum, and not kizayit. In our Mishnah it says, Nishtala kaved, below nishtayer klum, that nothing was left of it. And then it would really be a question as to which stam Mishnah you are paskening like, since neither of them have the word kizayit in them. But anyway, either way, you have a question here as to why either he didn't just say halacha kistam mishnah, and then we would have figured out according to the Balei Tosafot that it's the other mishnah. Or according to Rashi, it's a more fundamental question. We don't know which stam mishnah here to paskin like. So why is he paskin like that stam mishnah? And so it should have been a safek, not a conclusive position that the other mishnah is correct. So where it says, so amarai ninu valibid the Rabbi Yochanan. The answer is, you have two amaraim bringing a misora from Rabbi Yochanan. You have, this happens many times in Shas. Rabbi Barchano is the one who brought the name of Rabbi Yochanan aloha kistam mishnah. We have other Amoraim bringing memra from Yochanan saying Aloha is like a particular Mishnah. And the Gemara many times says, why do you need that? It's already a Stam Mishnah. And the Gemara answers, Amorai, I'll leave it to Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Bar Chana has that principle. Other Amoraim don't have that principle. And therefore, since they don't have that principle, they need to specify the Aloha like one of the Mishnayot, or specify what's going to happen in these situations. And that's what happens over here. Rabbi Yosef has this Mesorah that Rabbi Yochanan Paskin like that Mishnah, because he doesn't have the principle of Halacha Istam Mishnah, or, according to Rashi, it does have the principle, just the principle doesn't do anything for you over here, because it makes it into a Safek. So you needed something else in order to override over here, which takes away the Halacha Istam Mishnah in this situation. Again, we have another Memra. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak for Rabbi Yosef. Am Rabbi Yochanan. Mara Shinikva. If you have a gallbladder that gets a puncture in it, Vikaved Sot Mata, and the liver, which is adjacent to it, covers over the hole, Kshera, that is fine. Am Rabbi Yitzchak for Rabbi Yosef. Am Rabbi Yochanan. Nike Vakurkaban. If the gizzard of the oaf, there's a kurkaban doesn't exist in an animal, it only exists in a bird. The bird has, part of its digestive system, it has what's called the zephek and the kurkuban, which the English translations are, zephek is the crop, and the kurkuban is the gizzard, and it's part of the digestive system. The zephek prepares it, and then the kurkuban does the major digestion of the items for the bird. It's a heavily muscular organ that moves around and crushes whatever's inside of it and does the major work of digestion for the bird. So if there's a hole in the bird kurkuban, v'kish shelo kayam, and its pocket is still there, kasher. So what they're referring to is the structure of the kurkuban, again, is that there's a muscular outside, because again, it's an organ that squeezes, moves around, helps with digestion of the food. Internal to that, you actually have what's a white film or a white barrier. And then in addition to that, there is a yellowish substance there, which is what peels away. It's actually when the, quote unquote, the women clean the chickens, the Rishonim speak about taking out the discard or refuse that's there, which is this half-digested food that's in there. They're able to take out the food along with the pocket, along with this yellow thing that comes out with it. Most of the Rishonim believe it's that yellowish pocket that you can remove with the food there. There is a position in the Achronim that suggests that it's the white film that's internal there. That's a membrane that is also there. Although, it doesn't sound like that way. And you can see in Rashi, on the Rif says, or shakurkaban mi bifnim v'niklaf mimenu. Something that you can peel away. Something that can be taken out. And that's mentioned by many of the Rishonim over here. It's speaking about that part of the kurkaban that can be removed or taken out. And that's what the reference is to here. So even if you have a puncture in the kurkuban, the muscular side of the kurkuban, as long as you have those membranes internally that are intact, then it's not considered to be a hole. Ibailo, what about in reverse? Nike vakis, vakurkuban kayam, what happens if the membrane is punctured, but the muscle of the organ is still intact? My, what's the din over there? Tashma, damar of Nachman, nike ze, below ze, kasher. As long as one of them is not punctured, then it's okay. So any of these organs where there's a double membrane, in general, if only one of the membranes or part of the muscle is punctured, that's not enough. We need a puncture all the way through to what we call Beit Chalalo, to the cavity of the organ. Again, in the Mishnah, the Balei Tosafot mentioned that the Mishnah only speaks about that with the heart, because the heart is super muscular, and therefore you may have a Havamina that you didn't need to reach Beit Chalalo, and that's why it mentions it in particular. By other organs, it's obvious that there's going to be a puncture that you're going to reach the cavity that is internal to it. So now, Amar Rava, Shnei Orot Yesh Lo Deveshet. If you remember, we saw this earlier in the Gemara, when we discussed this back on Daf Chof Chet, and that is that the Chitzon Adom, Upnimi Lavan. The outer part of the esophagus is red. The internal membrane or muscle of the esophagus is white. Nikev Zeh Belo Zeh. If one is punctured without the other, Kasher. Again, Nikeva Veshet, is something that makes it into a trefa. That nekev has to be mifulash. It has to go straight through both muscles of the esophagus. That means the red outer one and the internal lining, the white one. Lama lemi meimar chitzon adom upnimi lavan. Okay, so just tell me that there are two skins there. Why are you telling me that the outer one is red and the inner one is white? The chalif trefa. Because if they are reversed, then it's automatically a trefa. Rashi over here says that the I chalif means that they are reversed, meaning that there's red on the inside and white on the outside, which means a complete reversal. That's a trefa if they are inside out. In essence, the esophagus is inside out. That's considered to be a problem. Whereas there are others who say the I chalif, and it's quoted in Rashi's name as well, that the I chalif is that if the internal one turns red, because the internal one turning red is a bad indication. It means that some sort of poison or something happened to the internal one. But the implications of that statement are, if both of them were white, then it would be fine. So there are two different versions of what Rashi said, whether it means that it's a total reversal of the colors, and that's a trefa, and then it wouldn't matter. Or is Rashi saying that if they both turn red, that it's problematic, and that would mean because the internal one's red, that's, as we're going to see in a second, indication of eres or a problem in there. But if that means that they were both white, we wouldn't have a problem with it. Ibailu, nikvu shnehem ze shelo keneged ze mau. What happens if you have a puncture through both membranes or both muscles, but they are not on the same parallel line? So you have a puncture below and then a puncture up above. What do we say about that? So Amar Marzucha Mishmedra Papa, Biveshit Kasher, when it's in the esophagus, it's no problem. Berkurkaban Pasul, when it's in the gizzard, it's problematic. The reason being, as Rashi explains over here, when you have the esophagus working, the food is not stationary at all. The food is moving down the esophagus, it's being pushed down by the muscle of the esophagus, and therefore it doesn't spend a lot of time near the hole, wherever that internal hole is. Generally, we're going to assume the internal hole is higher than the external hole, because then otherwise it'd be much less of a problem, because the food doesn't climb, it's going descending. So what we're afraid is that the food's going to get between the membrane. They have a hole there, it'll seep in between and then get out the other hole. Or something happened. That's what causes the trefa. So when you have the esophagus where the food's moving through and doesn't stay stationary, it's not locked in one place, then it'll pass by the hole, won't have enough time to exit, or even have time, it's not going to get between the membranes, and it won't be a problem. The kurkuban, on the other hand, the food sits in the kurkuban. That's the whole point of the gizzard. It works the food. It digests it. It crushes it. And so it spends a lot of time stationary. If that's the case, then the food can seep between the membrane, the internal membrane, and reach the external hole, and then it'll exit from there or cause the problem. So that's what Rapapa's logic is, that the veshet, when they are not parallel, the holes, will never be parallel, and it won't be a problem. Whereas by the gizzard, even though they're not parallel, there's a chance, because there's so much sitting, and because it's stationary, the food then has time for it to work between the membranes, and exit from the internal membrane, and then go out the external membrane. But now we have Matkifla Ravashi, Adrabo. Ravashi thinks just the opposite. Veshit de Achlobe, the veshit which by he eats, Upayabe, and he also, I'm going to loosely leave the word, Rashi translates it in two ways. Either one is that he breathes with it, or the other one is that he makes noise with it. Ravach Gamdale, Upashtale. The word Ravach, it's not clear whether that belongs in the Gemara over here. But nevertheless, it means that it expands and contracts, upashtole, and therefore the holes could possibly extend, vizimnin, demehan drizin, bahadei adodi. And there's a chance that they will align. What's happening here is that the esophagus in general is a soft tissue organ. It's something that doesn't have real strong form to it. It's a muscle. But then when food goes down the esophagus expands to allow the food down and contracts to push the food through. So that means that even if holes are not aligned originally, because it's a soft tissue and it's not a kind of collapsed tube, but when it starts to extend itself to allow the food through, it's possible that they would align. Rashi over here says that upaya means either to breathe or to make noise, both of which he acknowledges go through the trachea and not through the esophagus. So why does that impact the esophagus? We're speaking about things about the trachea. He says because there is a connection between the trachea and the esophagus sits behind the trachea. And when the trachea expands or has air that's pulled down it or pushed up it, that causes an extension, a little widening of the trachea, which also causes stress on the esophagus. It makes the esophagus straighten out a little more or pull apart a little more. So even though it's the trachea, because the two are attached, there's an influence from the trachea onto the esophagus, and that stretching of the esophagus causes the holes to align. So what Rav Ashi is saying is that in the esophagus, that type of movement allows for a possibility of the holes to align. Korgaban de minach naich kedekai koi. The korgaban, on the other hand, is sitting in place. It doesn't move. And since it doesn't move, then it's impossible for them to align. So what Rav Ashi is pointing out is that we're not worried about it going between the membranes, because the membranes are sealed together. And so what we're really worried about is, can the holes align? So he says by the korgaban, which is pretty static, it is a muscle, it does squeeze, but it doesn't really move around. It's not stretched and then contract, stretched and contract like the esophagus. So therefore the holes won't align, and therefore it won't be a problem. The esophagus, which has a lot of movement in it, both when food goes down it, as well as when the trachea expands, either because of noise, speaking, or because of breathing, that causes an expansion of the, or stretching of the esophagus, and that can cause the holes to align. On the other hand, Rapapa's focus, on the other hand, is on the seeping between the membranes. And he says that by the korgaban, it's much more likely to seep between the membranes because it's stationary because the food is sitting there. Because by the esophagus, you don't have enough time for it to seep. It's always moving, and so it won't seep in between. So Amalei Rav Acha, Breda Rav Yosef, Rav Ashi, Hacha Amrinan Mishmei de Marzutra, Damer Mishmei de Rapapa, Kavateich. Rav Acha, Breda Rav Yosef says to Rav Ashi, they say over in the name of Marzutra, in the name of Rapapa, like you. So there's a different version of what Rapapa said, or a different misora of what Rapapa said. And he says that there was a version that was akin to what Rav Ashi said, and therefore it wouldn't be a stira between them, because now Rapapa and Rav Ashi were saying the same thing. Amar Rabba, and this might be influential on the previous statement about Shnei Arot Yesh Leveshet, where many change the gears there to Amar Rabba as well, and say that it is also a statement of Rabba, not Rava. But Amar Rabba, Krum Shala Machmat Makah Beveshet Eino Krum. If there is damage to the esophagus, there's a hole in the esophagus, but it's scabbed over. Something filled in, and now it's plugged the hole. That is not considered to be a cover. That's still considered or classified as a trefa. The question is this unique to the Veshet? Or is this true of all organs? So the Ravan and the Ra'ah make the claim over here that this is only true of the Veshet. And that is because the Veshet does a lot of movement. And since it does a lot of movement in the organ, then if you have something that's scabbed over or plugged the hole, that tremendous movement is going to cause a dislocation or dislodging of whatever scabbed over there, and it's going to open up again. And that's why it's not considered to be a krum. By other organs where there is less such movement or extension, contraction of the organ, then over there the krum might be a good krum. Many of the other Rishonim, following the sheet of Rashi, believe that it is true of all organs. The reason Rabba mentioned the Veshet is because it's the first one enumerated in the Mishnah. And it's the first thing in the digestive system of Nekev that you would reach. So since it's the first Nekev, he describes it there, but it's applicable to all the other organs as well, which is that a natural sealing of the hole is not good enough because it's not permanent. It will dislodge at some point and cause it to be a trefa again. Now, we had a number of items that were mentioned, including just today, we mentioned that if the liver and the gallbladder were adjacent to each other, and the hole in the gallbladder faced the liver, that wasn't a hole because the outer side of the kaved of the liver covers over the hole of the maran. And we had in our Mishnah also with the hemseis and the beta kosot, that they have to be punctured outwards, not internally, because they would cover each other over. Why don't we say over there that the same problem? So Rashi already addresses that. And he says that when you have something that is naturally there, that is the natural placement of the organ. The liver is adjacent to the gallbladder, and it will always remain adjacent to the gallbladder. And that means that that is a efficacious seal on the hole in the gallbladder because it's not going anywhere. No matter what stress you have on it, the liver is staying next to the gallbladder. And same with the hemseis and the beta kosot. Whereas something that is a plug, that is a grown-in scab, that's something that could be dislodged or dislocated from its place. And therefore, it's a problem. So Rashi just addresses that issue of the organs sitting on each other. So those are naturally situated there, and nothing's going to change. There's no reason for that status quo or that static state to change. Whereas something that's scabbed over is not a natural state of the organ. And therefore, it's very highly likely that it will dislodge, and therefore it'll cause it to be a treifa again. V'amar Rabba, veshet ein lo b'dika, mi b'chutz, ela b'mifnim. So this is what we referenced before, the Gemara in Kaf Chet Amud Bet, where we learned about the veshet ein lo b'dika b'chutz. You can't check a veshet, you can't check the esophagus outside, ela b'mifnim, only internally. Rashi says over here, the fisha or ha chitzon adom. The outer layer of the esophagus, as we said before, is red. And if you're looking for a tibat dam, you're looking for a drop of blood on it, red doesn't show up on red. So you need to do it internally, which is the white side or the internal part of the intestine, which is white, where red will be visible or a red drop would be visible. My nafkamino. Why does it matter that you have to do this? Since you have to check both of them anyway to see if the hole went through the entire esophagus. The safek drusa. If you have a question about a drusa, the way Rashi describes it over here, is it's a situation in which a lion went amongst the flock, but we don't know if he did any damage to the behemoth there. And so now we need to check them because it's a safek drusa. So now, if it's a safek drusa, you need to check the esophagus. Checking the esophagus is very difficult because it's red. And the poison that is assumed to be coming from the clawing of those animals that attack their prey and put their claws into it, that poison is reddish, and it won't show up on the external side of the esophagus, it'll only show up on the internal side of the esophagus. Or, for those that believe that the eris causes a hole in the esophagus, again, the visibility of the hole would only be apparent on the white side, not on the red side of the esophagus. And so that's what the nafkamina is for a safek drusa. Now, some want to be midayek out of here, which is, that's true of a safek drusa, but if it was a vadai drusa, then you don't even have to check it. It's problematic, period. And there's nothing to do about checking it. Checking it won't help. Others just say that safek drusa is the same thing as drusa. And since safek drusa can be checked, so too a regular drusa can be checked. And Rabba is saying this in a safek drusa to be mafkia from the position we're going to see in a second of Ulo, who doesn't believe there's a problem of a safek drusa. Now, Rashi claims that by a bird, which is the sugya that we had back in Kof Chet Amud Bet, which was that a bird, you can solve the problem easily, which is you check the trachea, you check the trachea that it's fine, you check the trachea, you only need one siman and an oaf, and then you can pull out the esophagus and check it. We don't worry about the fact that you cut through the esophagus in the exact location where there was a hole, or in the exact location where there was a drusa. He said, but by behema, you can't use that solution, because the behema needs two simanim to be cut. And if you cut the trachea and then the esophagus, you possibly are cutting through the area where the drusa happened. If that's the case, you're going to miss it now when you go to look for it afterwards. So Rashi says over here that's not a problem, because he says there when the eris spreads, when the poison spreads, it causes a reddish area that is larger than the cut of the shchita. And so even if you do the shchita and you hit the place where the drusa was, around there, near there, you would see reddish spots, and that would give you an indication of drusa. And so Rashi says that this check is efficacious both for birds and even for a behema. Both of them have a takana, because you can look after the fact and see if it was there. The Balei Tosafot do not agree with that. It says, Perish HaKuntris, Dibbe Behema Nami Ika Takanta. And he says, he doesn't think that's the way. He says, the Fima Shepirashti Beperek Bet. What I've explained back on Daf, Kof Chet Amud Aleph, you can't say that. What it has to do is that Rashi over here believes that drusa or safek drusa is not really a statement about drusa. It's a statement about a general problem in the esophagus. It's a more generic statement that if you have a problem where you have a chashash for a hole, or you have a chashash for a drusa, how do you check the esophagus? And Rashi says that this has broader application. It's not just about a drusa. On the other hand, the Baal Tosafot would say that safek drusa is exactly what it means. Safek drusa. And therefore, they explain the Gemara back on Kaf Chet as speaking about a case of drusa. And a bird that was attacked. And therefore, the Gemara on Kaf Chet that says how to deal with it is only with a bird because you can check the trachea, not the esophagus. That's a bird exclusively, and that's it. Rashi says that this has broader application. Even back there, he said it's not even a case of drusa back there. It's a case of drusa, just an indication that there's something wrong. It was a hole. Or there was some dumb that you're looking for, and you can only see it on the inside. And so Rashi sees it as being a broader spectrum of application, and therefore he says, even by behema, it has application over there. It just happened to be a bird. And in a bird, you have a problem of it being a smaller area, or the drusa is smaller. Whereas by an animal, the area is bigger, or the poison spreads further. And therefore you can see it after the fact. So Rashi's explanation over here and there are somewhat complementary, and therefore Rashi believes that a behemah can be checked. And the Baal Tosafot said that a behemah can't be checked because of the fact that you might cut through the area where the problem is. Oh, it's Hai Safek Drusa, the Ate the Kameh the Rabbah. They had an incident where a Safek Drusa was brought before Rabbah to check. Habakabodikle Rabbah the Veshet Mevrai. He was checking the esophagus on the outside. Abaye says to him, aren't you the one who taught us? You told us that you can only check an esophagus on the internal side. Why are you checking on the outside? It has no meaning at all, or it's not sufficient. So Afke Rabbah, Ubatke. So Rabbah turned the esophagus inside out and checked it. Vishka kachale trei korte damo. And he found 2 drops of blood on the esophagus on the internal side. Vitarfa, and he made it into a treifa. Whether the 2 drops of blood are literally drops of blood, for those that believe that the problem with the drusa and the eris is that it causes punctures, and therefore the puncture would have a drop of blood that was visible on the internal side, evidencing the hole there, or whether it means, korte de dama means a red splotches there, which are indication of eris spreading on the esophagus. Either way, the evidence was on the inside. So why didn't Rabbah check the inside in the first place? Why does Abaye have to remind him? He wanted to check if Abaye would catch on. He did it intentionally to see if Abaye would question him and then tell him to check the inside. And Abaye was on the ball and said to him, Rebbe, did you tell us you have to check the inside while you're checking the outside? And he passed the test that Rabbah was putting up for him. Amar Ula, Yoshev lo kotz vaveshet, ein choshishim shema hebri. If a splinter, a needle, a thorn gets lodged inside the esophagus, we don't worry about. Now here there are 2 ways to read this. Rashi brings both interpretation. The word hevri can be the word from the word bari, which means to be healthy. We don't worry about the fact that it punctured through the esophagus and then the esophagus resealed afterwards. It scabbed over and now it's gone. But originally there was a puncture through there. Or Rashi says Shema Hivri comes from the word barai, which means to go to the outside. That we don't worry Shema Hivri. We don't worry that whether it punctured through to the outside of the esophagus. Either explanation, the idea being that even though they have a thorn or a needle lodged in the esophagus, we don't worry about the fact that it went through both walls and either healed or went through both walls and we just don't see it over here. Ula Ula, Maishna misafek drusa. Why is it that Ula thinks that this is any different than a safek drusa? A safek drusa is we have an animal that's kshera, and now we have some sort of safek that came up because there was a lion walking around amongst the flock, and there's a high likelihood that he might have done damage to some of the animals. So over there, we worry about it. Over here, you also have evidence that something might be amiss because you have a thorn that is wedged or lodged in the esophagus. That's also good evidence of the fact that there's a problem over here. So why does Ula, in one case, think that we worry about it by the Safek Drusa? In the case of the thorn, he doesn't worry about the Safek over there. They both start with a position of Cheskat Sheira, and now there's some sort of mitigating item that says maybe we need to check on the Chazakah of the Kashrut of the animal. Where answers, Kosav Ula, Ein Choshishim the Safek Drusa, Ein Ochanami. Ula is consistent in his opinion. He disagrees with Rabbah, and he says that we don't worry about a safek drusa, just like we don't worry about a safek of a thorn being lodged or wedged in the esophagus. Now Rashi over here says when the needle punctures through, it's only if there's no blood spot on the internal side of the esophagus. Meaning that if there's a hole in the internal membrane, or there's no hole at all, we don't worry about it. But if there's a drop of blood there, then we worry that it went all the way through, because that's more evidence of the fact that there was a serious hole here beforehand. Then the Baal Tosafot say, "V'nira dein lachush afil yesh mifnim." Even if there is a drop of blood internally, if there's no drop of blood on the outside, we don't worry about it going through. So the Tosafot according to Ula are even more makil, which is that even if you see evidence of a hole internally, but you don't see evidence on the external side, you don't have to worry about it. As Rashi says, if there's already evidence of a hole internally, then you get a high likelihood that there might have been a problem on the outside, and we do worry about it puncturing all the way through, and it would be a problem of a straight far, it's a fake straight far then. Now the Gemara looks at Ula's position and says, how is this different than other spekot that we face? For instance, why is this any different than 2 pieces of fat Achat shel chelev, achat shel shuman. Two pieces in front of the individual. One of them was kosher fats. One of them was non-kosher fats. And he ate one of them, and you don't know which one he ate. We say he has to bring an asham taloi. He has to bring a korban. We assume that he did something wrong over here. So there's a safek. It's a 50-50 safek. And yet we worry about that safek. Why over here would we not worry about the safek? Mar says, otam itchazek isura. Over there, the isur was present. We know bivadaut. We know with certainty that there was something that was problematic. That there was one thing of isur that was definitely there. That's very different than our case where we have no evidence of isur. We have a chesked kashrut and maybe an undermining of that chesked kashrut. But that's all we have. We do not have something that indicates that for sure there was a problem here or for sure there was an isur over here. Our situation is that you're starting out with an animal with a chesked kashrut and you're trying to undermine it. So that's different than the case of the two pieces where you have a chesked isur where we know for sure there was something wrong there. And that's why over there, if it's a fake, you have to bring a korban. Now, the Gemara does not bring the example of where there's one piece of fat, safek shuman, safek chelev, where there's a safek whether it was kosher or non-kosher. And Tosva notes, we don't bring that as evidence because even though lo itchazek isura, he says, but also lo itchazek name hetera, because there's no hezkat kashrut about this piece from the outset, unlike the animal that has a hezkat kashrut from the outset. The Gemara doesn't bring it because it's not itchazek isura, but there's also no hezkat kashrut. So that's not going to prove anything. How is that different than someone who checks with a sakin, with a knife, checks the knife afterwards and finds a nick in the knife afterwards? Then we suggest that whatever he checked it before was problematic because now there is a nick in the knife and that probably was there beforehand. So there, there was a problem. There was a diminishment of the chesed kashrut. You now look at the knife and there's a nick in it. That's a pretty good indication there might have been something wrong beforehand. And if that's the case, you've lost your chazoka of it being something that was shechted bekashrut, and it's more likely to be something that now has a chesked isur to it because of that reyuta, because of that problem. Now Rashi over here has a slightly different gears in the Gemara. He says, how is this different than a shokeh besakim biduka? He checks with a knife that was already checked. So the knife was checked, and there didn't seem to be any nick on it. They check, and then they check it again, and there is a nick on it. So for Rashi, it's even a more extreme case. They did check it beforehand, and it was totally clean, a good knife. Then they did the shkita, and then they see a nick in it. We assume still that's problematic. And the Gemara answers, the reason for that is that the chazaka of the kashrut is diminished by the fact that you found a nick immediately afterwards. That nick that you find immediately afterwards was likely there beforehand. They don't just happen to come about, unless there was something in the process of the shkita that would indicate to you that you went through something hard or touched bone that would cause that problem. Otherwise, there's no reason to believe that the knife became nicked in the shechita itself. If that's the case, it likely was there beforehand, and you missed it in the original bidika. Rashi also notes over here the language that the Gemara uses of itchazek and ityalid, that something is born versus itchazek isura. Before, the Gemara used with the shuman and the chelev that was itchazek isura. Ityalid is what they use here with the knife, and Rashi explains the difference as itchazek, you say was something that was there originally, meaning that the shuman and the chelev are there from the outset. So itchazek isura means the isur existed already. Ityalid isura was when there's a change in the status quo, which is here by the knife. The knife was assumed to be fine. Then you find a nick in it. That's called ityalid by isura. That there was an isur born in it, that means that the status of the knife changed over here. And since it changed, that led to reuta over here. That leads to a diminishment of the chesed kashrut of the knife. We also have cases where you have Safek Tuma Bishuta Yachid, and Safek Tuma Bishuta Yachid is considered to be Tameh, the Sfeko Tameh. Tuma says, that's an unfair comparison. Why don't you compare it to a Safek of Tuma that it takes place in the Bishuta Rabim, the Sfeko Tahor? Over there we say the Safek is Tahor. Ela, Hotam Yochata Gmirala Misota. That is a halacha l'moshe misinai from Sota, or really a limud out of the psukim by Sota, which tells us that the Sota, or the Safek Sota, which takes place in a private area, that's where we deem Safek Tuma as if it is Tameh, and that's why she has to drink the Meh Sota. But if it's done in a public place where there isn't Yichud, obviously there's no Sota there, and therefore a Safek Tuma, Birshut Rabim, is considered to be Tahor. Tosafot in the Gemara in Sota discusses whether one of those two items is not a chiddush, And which of the two is Lalacha the Moshe Mitzvah? That's a Chiddush. Is it both that Sveikot Tameh and Sveikot Taor are Chiddushim? Or is one of them, the Safek Tameh, the natural outcome that you would have assumed? And Sveikot Taor is Lalacha the Moshe Mitzvah, or vice versa, which is the default, or both of them Lalacha the Moshe Mitzvah? So here we differentiated other Sveikot from our Safek over here. Yoti Vaumi Rabbonu Kameh Rav Kahana. So you have a Rabbonu, one of the Rabbonu that was sitting for Rav Kahana, Yotim Kamar. Nimtzeit itmar. He said that's only if it was found in the esophagus. About yashav chayshinan. If it was lodged or was stuck in there, then we would worry about it. Amar lo Rav Kahana lo tatzitulei. Don't listen to what he said. Yashav itmar. The quote that we had from Ula was yashav lo kotz baveshet. And that's the proper mesorah. That's even if it was lodged in there, even if it was stuck in there, that's still where Ula set his position. About Nimtzeit, lo itzrichalei l'Ula. We don't need Ula. If there's a thorn in the digestive system, or a thorn that went down the esophagus, but it's not lodged in or stuck there, dekulu chivei brariyota kotzei achlan. All wild animals, or all animals that go out to graze, end up eating sharp things or eating thorns. That's just part of their natural diet. That's what's out there in the field. And you never have a kosher animal. Any animal that swallowed a thorn was a problem of a safek, then you'd never have kosher animals. We don't need Ula to tell us that that's kosher. Ula has to tell us that even though there's something now that makes us suspicious, like it's lodged in place or it's stuck in the esophagus, that's where you might have had a chashash. That's where he tells us, don't worry about it. And that's the chiddush, and therefore he dismisses this statement of the Rabbanan that presented it otherwise. And Tosafot points out that even though later on we're going to paskin against Ula and say that a safek drusa is problematic, nevertheless, we still hold of his position over here with regards to the Yashava Kotz. And that's because he makes a distinction here, the Balei Tosafot, between Drusa, which is Shchiach, and Treifa, that's Lo Shchiach, and therefore it changes the dynamic of the Chezkera Kashrut with regards to Drusa versus Treifa. Okay, Itmar, Torbetz Haveshet. So the Torbetz Haveshet is the very upper part of the esophagus. It's what otherwise is known as the pharynx, which is the part of the esophagus where it attaches to the lower jaw. That's how Rashi describes it over here. And it has a different muscular texture than the remainder of the esophagus. It's much harder, much more solid than the remainder of the esophagus going down. And the question is that Torbetz Haveshet, which exists both in an animal and in a bird, what is the status of that veshet? So Rav Amar Bimasho, Rav says that if he has any hole in it, any problem in it, it's problematic, it's a treifa. Shmuel Amar Berubo, it's more like a tracheal ring, which is hard, and therefore it has to be cut along the rove of it in order for it to be considered a treifa. If it just has a small puncture in it, it's not a problem. Rav Amar B'Mashu, Makom Shchitao. Rav thinks it's just like the rest of the esophagus. It's a place where you can do shchita. And if you can't do shchita, then it means it's still the esophagus, it's still that siman. And if it's the veshet and nekev, even a hole in it is posel. And that's Rav's position. Shmuel Amar Berubo, lav makom shchitao. It's not a place where you can do shchita. So since you can't do shchita, it's not negdar keveshet. It's not like the veshet. It has a different rules with regards to treifa. What Rashi points out over here is that Rav believes that there is no such thing as hagrama in the veshet. In the trachea, we had a psul of hagrama, which is when you leave the area of what's considered to be the kosher area of the trachea of the shecht, that we did earlier on in the Masechta. How far up towards the mouth can you shecht and still be considered the trachea? And if you go out of that area, it's called hagrama. Rashi says that that din of hagrama only applies, according to Rav, to the trachea, does not apply to the veshet, because there's no place along the veshet up to the jawbone, which is improper to shecht. For Shmuel, there will be that. The area of the torbetz veshet would be problematic, and the hagrama would apply to that area, just like it applies to the upper area of the trachea, where we discussed the numerous opinions over there, how high up you can go and still be kasher. But nevertheless, over here by the esophagus, it's going to be a machloket Rav and Shmuel with regards to this matter. So, hayniu torbetz haveshet. How do you know what is the esophagus and what is the pharynx? How do you know where it changes over from one to the other? Amar mari bar mar ukva amar Shmuel. Kol shechotcho umarchiv, zehu torbetz haveshet. Anything that you cut, and when you cut it, it expands. And as Rashi notes over here, it doesn't mean that the cut itself expands. It means the circumference of the esophagus, when you cut at that point, expands. That's considered the torbetz haveshet. because that is something that is hard, and when you release it, it expands outwards. And then if you slice it and it stays the same circumference, that's the esophagus itself. That's because it's a much softer tissue. So when you slice it, nothing changes. It doesn't suddenly expand. You haven't just released something that was being held in place. And therefore, it does not expand. Rapapi says that we have from the master that it wasn't such. Umanu. And who is that from? That's from Rabibi Barabaye. Ella, he says that this is the determination. Because the muscle there is hard, when you cut it, the circumference stays stationary. It stays static. And so if you cut it and it doesn't move, that's the torbet zaveshet. Eleizu veshet atzmo. So then what's the esophagus itself? Because it's a muscle, and when you cut it, it actually shrinks. It actually shrivels up. So if the circumference shrinks or shrivels up, that's an indication that it's the veshet. So there actually is a view amongst the Rishonim that's brought by the Meiri, that there are actually three different places along the esophagus. There's a place along the esophagus where if you cut it, it shrinks. That's the veshet itself. There's a place where if you cut it, it stays stationary. And that's the beginning of the torbet zaveshet. And then there's another place where you cut it, and then it expands. So he claims that there's this continuum. There's the veshet, which shrinks, and that's definitely kosher. There's a part of the torbet zaveshet which is stationary, which is also kosher. And there's a part of the torbet zaveshet that expands, and that's the part that is problematic. There are others who say that it makes no difference. Even if it's stationary or static, or it expands, that's the torbet zaveshet. And according to Rav, even the torbet zaveshet is okay. How far up the torbet zaveshet is okay, that's that Meiri over there, where he says that the part that stays static is okay. The part that expands, even according to Rav, would be problematic. Others say the entire torbet zaveshet is fine, according to Rav, no matter what happens along that continuum. Yona Amar Zera. So Rashi claims that Yona over here is the name of a Chacham, and therefore it's the equivalent of Amar Yona, Amar Rabbi Zera. So that would be the Memra is being brought by Yona Amar Zera. Others suggest that Yona over here is, as you can see in the Masada Shas, that Yona is a reference to the bird, to a pigeon that is being shechted, and therefore it's particular to this bird. It's not necessarily a generic statement. Mivla'ata, the torbet zaveshet is called the Mivla'ata, the swallowing part, the pharynx over there. Bekama, and how wide is it? Amar Rav Avia, pachot misa'arta va'odif michitata. It's smaller than a barley seed, but it is bigger than a wheat kernel. So it's very minute area along the top of the veshet that is wider than a wheat kernel, but smaller than a barley kernel. So how Torah, Dava B'nei Rav Ukva. There was an ox that was owned by the children of Rav Ukva. Da'atcho be'shchita b'torbetz veshet, b'gamer b'veshet. They shecht it, the trachea was fine. Then they went into the veshet, but they started the shechita of the veshet in the torbetz of veshet, and then they slid over into the veshet afterwards. Amarova, Ramina Nalei, Chumrei de Rav, Chumrei de Shmuel. I'm going to paskin for them like the Chumra of Rav and the Chumra of Shmuel. Vitarif Nalei, and I'm going to make it into a treifa. Chumrei de Rav, Damarav, Imashu. Rav says that it's already a treifa by Amashu. And here where you cut into it at the torbetz of veshet, you already made it into a treifa before you finish the shkita. V'amar Rav makom shkitahu. But for Rav it doesn't make a difference, because then you were in the makom shkita and wouldn't have been a problem at all. Kishmuel, damar Rav makom shkitahu. I'm going to say like Shmuel that it's not considered the makom shkita, but the threshold is going to be like Rav, that only the smallest hole will be problematic. Ishmuel amar v'rubo. Shmuel said that it's not a treifa until you do the robe of it. Over here you moved over into the veshet before you cut the robe of it. Kirav, damar b'mashu. Tosafot points out, even though Shmuel earlier in the Gemara said Higrim Shlish and then went into a proper Shkita of the trachea of a Shnei Shlish is problematic, at least according to some of the Deot over there, over here that should have caused a problem over here as well. And therefore Rava did have a position even within Shmuel to say this. Either you have to say he doesn't hold of that view of Rav Huna and the name of Shmuel earlier in the Masechta, or we're really focused on what Rava says here, that he did it because of Chumrei Rav and Chumrei Shmuel, not just within the position of Shmuel. Or that simply there is no such thing as hagrama by the veshet, although that doesn't seem true. Rashi only ascribes that to Rav, not to Shmuel. Yugalgo mit milta matai the kamei de Rabbi Abba. So the issue got brought down and eventually ended up in front of Rabbi Abba. Amalu, Torah, ben the Rab, ben the Shmuel, Shari. He says, if you pass him like Rab, it's kosher. If you pass him like Shmuel, it's kosher. If you pass him like Rab, it's kosher because it was a good Shechita. He went through the Torbetz of Veshit. That was a place where you can do Shechita. And then you continued into the Veshit. It was all fine. So there's no problem here. Of course, every animal is a treif on the way through Shechita. But that's not a problem. And therefore, it should have been a kosher Shechita. For Shmuel, even though the Torbetz of Veshit wasn't a Makom Shechita, you moved into the Veshit afterwards and you cut the robe of the Veshit in the area of the Veshit. And the Torbetz of Veshit didn't make it into a treif because you didn't get through a robe of it. And therefore, it should be kosher Mimanovshach. Zilu Amrule, the braider of Yosef Barchama, go tell the son of Rav Yosef Barchama, the Lishlim Dmei Torah Lamare, that he has to compensate them. He made it into a treifa. He needs to compensate them for making it into a treifa. Now, Rashi points out over here that Rova, this is the famous Rova, is the son of Rav Yosef Barchama, but that is not Stam Rav Yosef in Shas. Stam Rav Yosef in Shas is Rav Yosef Rabbi Chia. Rav Yosef Bar Chia is the Stam Rav Yosef in Shas. Here we're speaking about Rav Yosef Bar Chama. And Rav Yosef Bar Chama was the father of Rava. He was also a Talmud Chacham, but Rava, his son, far exceeded him. And we see times in Shas where, first of all, he's telling his father halachot, or passing halachot for his father, because he had exceeded him in his erudition. But there's a reference to Rava. But Rabbi Abba over here is telling Rava is that you made a mistake in the Psak. Now you have to compensate the Yatomim over there because you did something wrong. Now, as Rashi over here says, Shukvari chilu leklavim, because they already fed it to the dogs, because they considered it a nevela, because ilo avakaman, if it was still around, he could just tell them to go eat it, and it'd be fine. Then he wouldn't have to compensate. The problem was that they already deemed it a nevela and fed it to the dogs. But Tosafot goes even one step further, and says that, he did it because you're dying. The reason he needs to say this is because Rava tab davar mishnah. There is an indemnification for people who are tab davar mishnah, that they don't have to compensate in those situations because it's so obvious. And the Gemara there says that Memrot of Rav and Shmuel are also things that are targeted by Mishnah because they're so well known, or because we're going to see in a second, Rabbi Abba's position is proved or backed up by a Mishnah, and therefore Rava should have known what he did was wrong and it was a targeted by Mishnah. And so therefore Rava shouldn't have been culpable for it. Eli and Cain, he did it be a dying. If he physically did it, if he threw it out the nevela to the dogs, then now he's responsible for it because he did it be yadayim, he did a hezek be yadayim. And that's why he's responsible to pay for it over here. Although some indicate that it's not a tav bar mishnah, as we'll see at the end of the sugya today, that he did have a basis for his position. And if that's the case, it's tav shikul adat, which is an area where a judge would be culpable to make the payment. Amar mar breid ravina, motvina tuyufta, klape sane derova. That they brought a strong refutation of Rava's position over here against the enemies of Rava. It's a Lashon Sagi Nohar, it's a euphemism. It really means against Rava, because in the Mishnah they're going to say that it's Basil Kwahoshe Kolech, that it's like a fool walking in darkness. And he didn't want to associate that with Rava, but the truth is that's what Rava did in this situation. The Gemara says, Glolam Hilkata Kitibre Beit Dilo. The halacha is always like Beit Hillel. But if you want to do it like passing like Beit Shammai, you can. If you want to pass like Beit Hillel, you can. Mikule Beit Shammai, umikule Beit Hillel Rasha. If you take both the kulot of Beit Hillel and the kulot of Beit Shammai, you're a Rasha. B'chumrei Beit Shammai, b'chumrei Beit Hillel, alava katub omer, aksil b'choshech olech. You take the chumrot of Beit Shammai and the chumrot of Beit Hillel together, then you're a fool walking in darkness. Now, as the Gemara points out in Eruvin, that this is only true in situations where their positions are mutually exclusive. One of the cases, which was what we brought in yesterday's daf, and I noted it then, is the case of the shidra, how many vertebrae are missing from the spine, or the piece of the skull that's missing. Let's use the vertebrae. Beit Shammai says you need two vertebrae to be missing for it not to be mitame boel. That standard is the same standard by treifa. In order for me a treifa to be missing from the shidra, you need two vertebrae to be missing. Beit Hillel says one vertebrae missing makes it that it's not mitame boel, but that also makes it that it's a treifa with one vertebrae. If you're taking the chumrah of both of them, you make it into a mutually exclusive. You say that, oh, when two are missing, then it's not mitame boel. But when one is missing, it is a treifa. Those are mutually exclusive positions, and that's why you are a psil b'choshek olech. walking in darkness because you're taking up chumrot from two positions that are mutually exclusive. And that is true in our case as well. Rav and Shmuel's positions that Rova combined are mutually exclusive positions. The reason Rav thinks that it's a problem of Mashu is because he thinks it's a Makom Shechita. Shmuel, who thinks it's not a Makom Shechita, thinks it's Rov. So now, if you are Nekdarit, can not go out of Makom Shechita, you can't say that it's a Mashu. Those are mutually exclusive positions, and that's what Ravina is pointing out. Rova did exactly that over here, and this Mishnah, or this situation, is a disproof to what Rova did. Ella, Ike Beit Shammai, Kukulehen, Uchumrehen. If you're going to follow Beit Shammai, you have to follow them all the way through. Ike Beit Hillel, Kukulehen, Uchumrehen. Or if you're going to follow Beit Hillel, you have to follow them all the way through. Now that's only true in one particular item. Again, where their positions are mutually exclusive. In two different issues, where the positions aren't mutually exclusive, then you can take a position of Beit Shammai here, or a position of Beit Hillel over there. But, Hagufa Kasha, the problem is, that we said before, Omar, Tlolam Alokha Kadivir Beit Hillel. The law is always like Beit Hillel, which does not leave you the option to pass on like Beit Shammai. Father Tani, Barotse, Lasok, Kadivir Beit Shammai, yes sir. Then afterwards it says you can choose. Pass on like Beit Shammai, pass on like Beit Hillel, just be consistent. Lo Kasha, that's not a problem. Kan Kodim Batkol, Kan Lachar Batkol. That's before the heavenly voice came down. That's after the heavenly voice came down. The heavenly voice came down and said, Alokha ke divrei Beit Hillel. Alokha is like the view of divrei Beit Hillel. Vibay Dema, Aflachar Bat Kol. Some say even after the Bat Kol, you can still choose like Beit Shammai. V'Rabbi Yeshua'i. And it's like Rabbi Yeshua from Tanur Shalach Nai, where Rabbi Eliezer tries to bring a proof from his position. He says a heavenly voice should come out and say, I'm right. And Rabbi Yeshua responds, Lo Bashamayimi. Damarim Mashkechim Bat Kol. We don't listen to a Bat Kol. And therefore, even after the Bat Kol, we still give you the option to paskin like Beit Shammai. Mikol Makom Kasho. This is a strong position against Rova. And what was Rova doing? So Amar Rav to vote, Kula Kirav Abdo. Rova actually paskin across the board like Rav. And the truth is, the Bait Tosafot say that he could also paskin across the board like Shmuel to get to this position. Just Kula Rav Shmuel, be Surei, the Aloch is like Rav. So therefore, they pushed it towards Rav's side over here. Techi, Ata Rami Bechazkel, Amar Lotitziluhu Lani Klale, Dekal Yehuda Achim Ishmei Derav. Don't listen to my brother Yehuda, who brought down all these memrod in the name of Rav. Hochi Amar Rav. This is what Rav says. Veshit Nanu Bo Chachamim Shi'ur, that the Veshit has a limit to where you can go. Michlau the Torba Tzav Veshit Lav Mekom Shechitahu. Vikamar B'mashu. And despite the fact that Rav believes that the Torba Tzav Veshit is not a Mekom Shechita, he still has a position that a mashu makes it into a treifa. So you see over here that there was a view that's brought by Rami Bar Yechezkel, who says, my brother Yehuda Bar Yechezkel was quoting Rav incorrectly. And when he quoted Rav, he said that it was a good Makom Shechita and a mashu. Rav really believes it's not a good Makom Shechita and still thinks it's a mashu. And Rava was following that view that was brought by Rami Bar Yechezkel in the name of Rav. Now, just to end off over here, the Baal Yitzchak discuss the issue of the Bat Kol. And he says, how come over here the Gemara is willing to paskin like Beit Hillel because of a Bat Kol? And in the case of Tanur Shalach Nai, the Gemara doesn't want to listen to Rabbi Eliezer from a Bat Kol. So he gives a number of reasons why, the first of which is that Rabbi Eliezer was Shmutiu. He was excommunicated. And since he was excommunicated, we don't listen to the Bat Kol. Even more is that the possibility that the Bat Kol only came out for the kavod of Rabbi Eliezer, but it wasn't necessarily a confirmation of the views of Halacha. And that is, by the case of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel were the majority. And therefore, the Halacha should have followed Beit Hillel. Our only safek was that Beit Shammai were sharper, so maybe the Halacha should follow Beit Shammai. There, the Bat Kol comes out and gives a stamp of approval to the normal process of Halacha and says, follow the majority, Beit Hillel. So there, the Bat Kol is affirming the normal process of Psach. By Rabbi Eliezer, who's a Shmuti, and Rabbi Eliezer, who's a Dat Yachin versus the Chachamim, over there where the Bat Kol comes out to support Rabbi Eliezer, that's going against the grain of Psach. And that's why over there we ignore the Bat Kol. So that explains why in some places we do, and some places we don't listen to the Bat Kol. Where it's affirming the normal halachic process, there we listen to the Bat Kol. Where it's going against the normal halachic process, over there we would not necessarily follow the Bat Kol, and that's what happens by the case of Rabbi Eliezer, where we don't follow it. Now, the Gemara over there in Irvin says that the reason that we paskin like Beit Hillel is because they always put the position of Beit Shammai before their own position. And so many ascribe that to the fact that Beit Hillel had better midot than Beit Shammai. I heard over in the name of my Rebbe, Reb Rosenzweig, that he suggested that that's not the reason why, but rather the reason is that if you can articulate and you can say over the position of your adversary in the disagreement, that means that you understand it fully enough that your disagreement is a real disagreement. If you cannot articulate the other side's position, that means that you don't really understand the other side's position, and therefore there's a deficit in your position. The fact that Beit Hillel could say over the position of Beit Shammai before they articulated their own position show they understood what Beit Shammai said, and nevertheless, they still thought the halacha was different or their halacha was correct. And that's why we paskin like Beit Hillel, because they were able to understand both sides of the position and yet still have their position. It's an important aspect of understanding when you're in a disagreement with someone, being able to articulate and understand what the other party is saying in order to disagree with them, because otherwise you're disagreeing without really understanding what the other party is saying, and then your disagreement may not be a fair disagreement. The last thing he notes over here is, why do we ascribe the fact that we don't listen to a bat kol to Rabbi Yeshua? Isn't that a general principle that lo b'shamayimi, and that we never listen to a bat kol? So he says, either because in the story in Tano Shalachnai in Baba Metziah, Rabbi Yeshua is the one who says it, and so therefore we just ascribe it to him, even though it's a truism in general, we still ascribe it to him because he's the one who invoked it, or maybe because Rabbi Yeshua has a position that we don't listen to bat kols anywhere, and that he has a more strong position where he says, we don't listen to bat kol because lo b'shamayimi, and that's a generic statement, as opposed to maybe in that case where we would have said the bat kol we don't listen to because it was a dat yachid, by Beit Hillel we will listen to it. Rabbi Yeshua makes a more blanket or generic statement is that we don't listen to bat kol at all, and that's why it's quoted in the name of Rabbi Yeshua over here. Okay, we're going to stop here about halfway down, Mem Dalet, Amud Aleph.